1 hour of television can change everything. And that's what happened to Prince Andrew when he spoke with BBC Newsnight's Emily Maitlis in 2019. The now infamous interview dissected the nature of the Prince's friendship with convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein, resulting in the Duke of York stepping back from his public duties. But the story behind that interview is equally as intriguing as the Newsnight interview itself.
I have a lot of people telling me that it's a mistake me even being in this room.
And yet here you are. And I can promise you one thing. You can't turn it around by staying silent. You know how people see you, don't you? Randy, Andy, Air Miles, Andy. This is sex and girls and planes and private islands and money. And with respect, the public see these stories and they think, yep, I can believe that. This isn't bad for your brand. This is your brand.
That's an excerpt from the new Netflix movie Scoop, which is based on the memoir of Newsnight producer Sam McAllister, telling how she hustled for the Prince Andrew interview and, as we heard there, did some pretty straight talking to get him over the line. The movie stars Gillian Anderson and Billy Piper, but I'm happy to say we're joined now by the real star of this story, Sam McAllister. Sam, welcome to Saturday Extra.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sam, movies based on true stories take liberties, blur the lines between fact and fiction. So let's cut to the chase. Did you really call Prince Andrew Randy Andy to his face when you were in a meeting with him trying to secure the interview?
It's hard to believe that anyone would do that in Buckingham Palace to a prince, but the answer is yes, yes, I did.
And why did you?
Because negotiation is all about trust and integrity. And there's a stage at which we're about an hour in, which obviously you can't show in a film, but there was a moment where I felt we had a true connection. He asked blunt questions and I gave blunt, truthful, not deferential answers. And that creates a bond of trust because he knew that I was a straight shooter.
The prince was at this time under mounting pressure over his friendship with Jeffrey Epstein, already a convicted sex offender. He died in prison a few months earlier, I think. The prince needed a circuit breaker. But an interview with one of Britain's hardest-hitting current affairs shows and toughest journalists looks like a strange choice looking on.
Well, I think if you're going to do a good interview, which of course most people think they will, and if you think you have good, strong answers that will convince the nation, it makes perfect sense because a lot of interviews of this kind are done in a very soft way. They don't really go anywhere and the public are completely unconvinced of them, by them. So one of my arguments was if you're going to do something, you need to do it with someone where the public will go, well, this was not a soft interview or easy peasy or pre-agreed. So had he given good answers, the public could have been certain that Emily's way of doing an interview would ensure that he would have a thorough, fair, but strong and firm interview. But he gave terrible answers.
Let's remind ourselves of some of those answers now. The 2019 interview, Emily Maitlis sitting down, as you say, in Buckingham Palace with the Duke. There are many infamous quotes from Prince Andrew, like this one, when Emily asked him why he stayed at Epstein's place in New York even after he'd been in prison for sex offences.
I'm just trying to work this out because you said you went to break up the relationship and yet you stayed at that New York mansion several days. I'm wondering how long.
But I was doing a number of other things while I was there.
But you were staying at the house of a convicted sex offender.
It was a convenient place to stay. At the end of the day, with the benefit of all the hindsight that one can have, it was definitely the wrong thing to do.
Whew, it was a convenient place to stay. Sam, you were in the room during the interview, hearing it all. What went through your head when he gave that answer?
I think it's just really the epitome of the worst answer you can give because there are more famous quotes in a sense, you know, about his alibi at Pizza Express and about his incapacity to sweat at the time. But that was such a misunderstanding about what people wanted. And it was such a fundamental misjudgment of how the real world works. And I think that that answer in particular was really shocking to hear because to think that that would be a justification for staying as a prince or as anyone with a convicted sex offender really is so off the mark that you did feel like an internal, you know, gasp of shock at thinking that that was a good answer.
Can you remember that, the internal gasp?
100%, because I was internally gasping for very, very many minutes. And I mean, that's part of the job of the producer. I call it a resting producer face. You have to show no human emotion. But over such a long period of time, in such a febrile, anxious, thrilling, and sort of, you know, terrible atmosphere, really, it was very hard to show no emotion, and particularly with those kinds of answers.
At what point did you realise how detrimental this interview was for the Duke? Was it when he mentioned going to Pizza Express in Woking for a party with his daughter Beatrice, or the fact that he had a condition that meant he couldn't sweat, both offered as proof that the claims of Virginia Giuffre that he'd sexually assaulted her on 17 occasions when she was 17 is proof that those claims were false?
Yeah, I think it was a couple of moments. The tone, basically from the second answer, felt wrong. And really what the public was looking for, and there's this disconnect, right, between his perception of what he needs to say and what the public expected, was, "I'm sorry." Obviously, he denies liability, and he still does, to be clear. But what they were expecting, what we were expecting, were countless kind of, you know, dull, in a sense, answers, apologizing relentlessly. And in that entire period, not a single proper apology ever came. And I think, in a sense, that was even more shocking than the catchy phrases that we took away from this interview.
The prince, as I said, needed to turn his image around. His assistant, I think it's his assistant, is quoted in the movie as saying, "One hour of television can change everything." What did you, the producer of this interview, think the odds were of this helping, not hurting Prince Andrew? Did you always know he would likely come out badly from this?
Yeah, it was actually my character, or me, this has become very meta, that said
one, it's very
one
meta.
Hour television.
Oh, it was you who said it. I beg your pardon.
Yeah, that's
I watched
right.
it, but well, I couldn't remember.
No, me neither, and I was there. It's all a lot. But that's true. It can change it. And in that particular scene where Billie Piper's playing me, she says, you know, "But it's not up to you. It's not up to me. It's up to him." And the truth is, in any interview, you have an open mind about how it's going to go. And it could have gone very differently, because the questions are fair, they're meticulous, they're methodical, but they're not cruel or curveball or sensationalist. They're very, very fair and calm. So it was his answers that were the huge problem. And, you know, with an open mind, he could have given great answers.
But what was your instinct? You, Sam, not you, Billie Piper. What was your instinct that he would or he wouldn't?
My instinct was that it was going to be very different from how it was, because we spoke to him on the Monday face-to-face. He told us some of the things he said on camera. But you know how this goes, Fran. They never say it on camera. They say it in the briefing conversation. And then when the cameras roll or the microphones start, they go back on everything and say something very bland instead. So I was expecting, you know, 45 minutes of bland responses, but that's not what we got.
Sam, in the movie, your character, are portrayed as a bit of an outsider. I'm getting technical up in there, as a bit of an outsider at the BBC and as in the Newsnight team. Is that how it was? And what was that about? There's a sense that it's about class. Was it about your journalistic experience? What was it?
Well, you know, it's probably about a couple of things. I would describe myself as a maverick, and probably sometimes my passion can be a bit of a pain, Fran, you know, and I was very passionate about my job, and I'm sure sometimes that might have rubbed people up the wrong way. But ultimately, I believe what we were doing was really important for democracy to be pretentious, and for, you know, journalism and truth and all of those things. So, yeah, perhaps I was a little bit less deferential and prescriptive than some of my colleagues, and I certainly probably dressed differently and those kinds of things. But ultimately, we were all trying to do the same thing, which was to hold powerful people to account. And the Newsnight team together, with me as one part of that, clearly did that on this incredibly important occasion.
Yeah, all that matters is you get the best out of yourself and your team, really. That's all that matters. Sam, has the Newsnight, so we're 5 years on now from this interview, has that Newsnight interview changed the relationship between the palace and the press, or the palace and the BBC particularly?
Yeah, I think really this was a bit of a one-off, you know, because Newsnight had never done a royal interview before, and clearly, Fran, they'll never do one again. And in truth, the relationship between the media and the royal family is sometimes a little bit too cozy for my liking. And this was the one exception to that rule. So in a sense, it's business as usual. You know, when there are royal interviews in most situations. To me, they're more of a conversation than a test of someone's mettle or a test of their accountability. So deference, I think, largely reigns in these types of interviews. And that's why this was so exceptional, not only his answers, but the lack of deference, not disrespect, but the lack of deference that we showed on that day.
Sam, we're almost at the news, but I'm intrigued to know that you now work not in journalism, but as a senior fellow at the London School of Economics in the law faculty. You are a lawyer, but you're teaching negotiation. Is that what getting this interview came down to, your negotiation skills? Are you a brilliant negotiator?
Well, that's very kind. I'm not going to blow too much smoke up myself, but I certainly...
Well,
I
I'm
certainly
asking
understand.
I'm not making an observation. I'm asking you, why negotiation for you?
Yeah, that's the thing I've always done all my life. And I enjoyed it very much when I was a criminal defence barrister. I enjoyed it very much working at the BBC. And I think, to be honest with you, it's the crux of almost every single human interaction, whether you're dealing with your dog, whether you're dealing with your kid, whether you're dealing with your boss, or whether you're dealing with Buckingham Palace. Effective negotiation really is the source to so much in life. And it's the thing that I enjoy a great, great deal.
Yeah, I remember when I was a baby journalist, people used to say, oh, they do good phone, you know, and it's all about getting someone across the line. Sam McAllister, thank you very much for joining us.
Pleasure.
Sam McAllister, author of the book The Scoops and former BBC Newsnight producer, and that Netflix film Scoop, I really recommend it. Coming up here after the news on Saturday Extra, after a week of violent attacks in Sydney, everyone's looking for answers about how to restore the fabric of our society. After eight, three people who have been engaged in this work for a long time. It's news time, 8 o'clock.